Hey, Jeff here. If you like the podcast, you might dig this. Dan Hodgins is going to join Lisa Murphy and I for 3 gigs in 2018. We're going to be in Portland, Oregon, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Madison, Wisconsin. We're calling it the Talking Play Tour because that's what we're going to be doing, talk and play. You can learn more at playvolutionhq.com/events. Hope to see you there.
Excuse me. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live with a mouthful of taquito from upstairs studio in studio. Lisa Murphy.
Hello and good morning.
Natasha Johnson.
Aloha.
Hey, people. I really lucked out because pretty much, you know, any of you, if you mean the universe would have worked out right, could be recording a podcast with Lisa Murphy. And then you'd be eating cold taquitos the morning after she cooked them.
Fresh.
But you're not, so
so neener, neener.
Hashtag winning. Hashtag blessed.
Oh, God.
So we're continuing our play types series. We're on to episode 10. We're over the hump. We're over halfway done.
Yes,
what
are we
getting into this time?
Set the stage,
set all the that
stage,
stuff.
All the good stuff from before. If you've been hanging out with us and listening to this series, you know what I'm going to say. If you're new, there are 16 types of play. He refers to them as play types. His name is Bob Hughes. He wrote a book, first edition, 1996, called A Play Worker's Taxonomy of Play Types. And the intention for this was to establish and identify types of play for adults who both study and facilitate play, kind of to facilitate the use of a common language, as it were. Couple reminders, the list is always evolving, should never be assumed to be complete. The list is presented in no order. It's very random. It's not like developmental or chronological or you know, sequential. And it's often that you will see more than one of the play types occurring in a play scenario. So there's the spiel.
Excellent.
And thank you very much. And
it's almost like you've done that 9 other times.
Right? I almost don't even need my notes. Symbolic play is number one, or the first one that we covered, rough and tumble play, and then socio-dramatic play, social play, creative play, communication play, dramatic play, locomotor play, deep play, and the one we're about to explore now, number 10, exploratory play. That was not intentional. That was totally on accident. Exploratory play is defined as play to access factual information consisting of manipulative behaviors, which I think is a pretty fancy way of saying touching stuff, handling items, throwing items, banging, or mouthing objects. Engaging with an object or an area and either by manipulation or movement, assessing its properties, its possibilities, and its content, such as stacking bricks. Seeing what things are able to do. Seeing what things taste like. Seeing what things sound like. They don't call it sensory play, nor is there a sensory play, but this to me sounds like you're using all of your senses mm-hmm. to see what's going on with the stuff.
You're kind of engaging with
your senses,
the world.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I don't know if we forget, but we got to remember that the way we get information for the brain to the brain is through the senses.
Yes.
And the more sensory input there is for a thing, the more information is getting to the brain. And so that touching and tasting and smelling, some of those things we kind of forget about on
I think unless you're hanging out with babies on a regular basis,
yeah.
You know,
that's
you forget
where my brain
this.
Went. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I even wrote, that was my little note. It's like infants. This is infants and olders.
Yeah.
You know, although I think when you hear like throwing, banging, mouthing, sometimes mouthing often makes you think, oh, this is just something you'd see in infants. And mm-hmm. I'm like, no. No. Handling, throwing, banging, stacking. well, all of that kind of
the,
stuff.
Your biting story about the...
The olders, the twins that were biting the infants? Yeah.
Yeah. Wanted.
So we, as all of you know, if you're listening, kids bite for 99,000 different reasons. And sometimes older children bite for also 99 different reasons. It's not always an aggressive thing. And we had a set of four-year-old twins who were quite verbal and were able to articulate, like, I'm hungry or I'm frustrated, but they, out of the blue, started biting just the babies in the family child care program. And so I'm thinking, okay, what's going on here? You know, so I called a meeting with mom and dad, and, you know, mom, of course, is now like, oh, God, we're the biting family. We're not going to be invited to the parties. And dad was sitting across from my kitchen table with that kind of blank...
The dad face.
But the eyeballs were telling me that maybe dad kind of knew what was going on. So I was like, come on, dad, what do you got? And he said, I don't think this has anything to do with it. And I'm like, yeah, give me a try. He goes, well, I play this game with them. And if you're listening, you all know the game, right? The I love you so much, I'm going to eat you up game. And for the record, I've never told a family to stop playing the game, but I always ask, what does it look like in your house? So this daddy's like, I come home from work, I got one kid under each arm, we start rolling around, we wrestle, we're tickling, and then I get to that, I love you so much, I'm going to eat you up. And so he was biting on their belly, saying that he loved them, and now the boys were coming into the school and telling the babies, and so having that more, you know, a little bit more data, a little bit more information allowed us to deal with that in a way and not overreact to that. But yeah, that's, you know, what happens to a baby when I go up to it and go, ah, rah, rah, rah.
Yeah, I know what they taste like. I like that story, but I mention it mostly because I love that taquito so much that I want to eat it up, and I wanted a chance to chew a little bit.
I didn't know it was the longest story.
Yeah, I know the story was the right length to get a bite or two of taquito in. And so we need to, this stuff, of course, and we focus on infants with this kind of stuff, a lot. But older kids need it, especially if they didn't get enough of it when they're little. I mean, there are plenty of three-year-olds that are still mouthing things as a way of gathering information because they're still in that stage.
Well, I'm also thinking this is a 3-4-year-old doing a puzzle, you know, having to manipulate and turn it until it fits, and your stacking pegs, I'm thinking your math and manipulative area, if you have one of those kind of defined in your environment, is this 100%. Your baby's on the floor crawling around, knocking stuff over to see what happens, putting things in their mouth, is this kind of play. Stacking three-dimensional items, object, loose parts out in your yard is going to be this kind of play.
Oh, yeah, the banging, I mean, just if you have a stick and hitting different things and hearing
what does
it
sound
like
a soundboard, right, with all the pots and pans and you're banging on
which
it.
Which child sounds different depending upon how you whack them.
Exactly. Whose head is harder than others' head?
Yes.
My brain right now is quickly scanning, hoping one of you start telling a story, the play types that we've already explored. I'm almost wondering if this doesn't fit almost... Like, if this is one of the ones that fits everything.
Just about everything,
that we've already back through and explored.
Just being in a new environment is ripe for opportunities for this kind of play.
And walking through it, like, even maybe just touching a different texture or a fabric or corduroy pants, which I don't think people wear anymore, but, you know, rubbing your nylons and, you know, what does the bubble wrap feel like? All of that kind of stuff would be exploratory play.
I like to, when I put my nylons on.
Do you?
I like to stuff bubble wrap. First, I wrap bubble wrap around my thighs and then pull my nylons up. Uh-huh. And, interesting feeling.
Caught him
please.
A few times doing this, and I just turn around and
walk away.
please, people, don't believe that I don't really do that.
Does he?
And in when we're talking about dramatic play and go and these other places.
Oh, and for new listeners, dramatic play is actually by definition here in this context where a child is watching or participating as. I don't like to say passive, but the child is watching something, participating via that.
Well,
an observer,
and so sociodramatic play, which is what we tend to call dramatic play. Anyway, I was thinking about taking grandbaby not too long ago to the carnival, and being in that environment. So there's with this definition, that's dramatic play, what's going on being in that environment. But there's also a lot of this exploratory play going on there, because her senses are fully engaged.
Yes.
And there's all the carnival smells and the carnival people. She got in there's this teacup ride. And it's got the little stationary round circle steering wheel thing, and then you just spin. It goes around in a circle, kind of slow, but you can spin yourself either direction as fast as you want on that sucker. And she would just go, because she likes that sensory input. She can't wait till she gets another 6 inches taller so she can go on bigger rides. There's some twisty turny rides that she could go on with me, but there's some she's not even big enough yet for. But this teacup thing, she just go around in circles, and so before the ride even starts, she starts spinning herself, and she went on that thing 4 times in a row once. It got to the point where the guy running the thing didn't even ever get off. He's like,
VIP privilege here, just stay.
Yeah, and I mean, he remembered her from last year. But that sensory input of spinning and the smell of cotton candy
and
deep fried Snickers
just the turning and the manipulation. I mean, I'm almost
understanding
wondering
that doing this makes this do this.
And I actually think that's what this is more of. I mean, I said sensorially, but now that I'm rereading it, I almost wonder if it's more using your hands.
Tactile?
Manipulative behaviors such as handling, throwing, banging, or mouthing. You know, so how can my hands make something happen? Teacups.
Yeah.
What happens if I turn the other way? What happens if I let go? What happens if they let me flip the teacup over and take that thing apart and see what's going on the inside of that?
Where's my hacksaw?
Assessing the properties and possibilities of the content of the items. Yes, I'm thinking.
It's more tactile than
it
is.
I think it's more tactile.
Sensorial.
Sensorial would meaning the smells and the sights and things like that. I think this might be, now that we're talking more about it, using your hands to do something.
Like rip into a taquito.
Ripping into a taquito. What happens when? What happens if I push this lever? Like playing Mousetrap. Remember, you had to like assemble all that stuff, putting together like an obstacle course.
That's so important, and yet we live in a world where kids are often being told to keep their hands to themselves.
Hands to themselves. Or you're done with that. Or that's not what that's for.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those blocks aren't for throwing.
Right? Shut up.
Those aren't, but these ones are.
And so how do we support more of this?
Well, I'm thinking of your manipulative area with the puzzles and the geo boards and the pegs for stacking and the busy boards and things like that, and realizing that a child might need to use the same thing more than one time. Right? That mastery, what does it do? And not only once I figure it out what it does, but what does it do if I try and use it a different way? You know, being open to a child being maybe more clever or more creative. And the child might see a second, third, fourth way of using the material you've put out that your adult eyes might not see.
Oh, yeah. Like with your puzzles, I mean, they're doing it in the frame, and then they decide to put the puzzle together outside of the frame,
right,
off to the side.
Right.
And, yeah.
Or upside down. I watched a kid do that one time. I've never thought to do that, but look at that kid putting that puzzle together upside down and backwards.
So maybe we need to get a little bit more expansive and again, we've talked about this before, and how we allow materials to be used, because this,
just because in
this
our
need to explore.
This is also going to be tools.
Yeah. Hammer,
you know,
saws.
A woodworking area. Oh, yeah. And
what about a sewing area? Needle and thread,
definitely.
Fabric,
And again, this gets into the loose parts, which we've apparently got 3 or 4 episodes in the books on just loose parts, if you want to go back and listen to those. But, I mean, this is all loose parts, because it's all using the hands to experience those things.
And realizing that when they use the stacking bricks as an example, that knocking something down and taking something apart is just as important as the initial assembly of the thing.
The destruction is a valuable part of
it. Is, and as a sidebar to that, I have been taught through my play therapy training that it's crucial, essential, to let the child be the boss of the deconstruction of what they've made. Not that we're play therapists, but it's something to keep in mind, that when when somebody else breaks down what you've done, that can actually be pretty upsetting
oh,
to
yeah,
children.
Taking ownership away from them.
Yeah, I mean, knocking that building down is it's closure.
It is. And in some people's brains, that is the realm of the person who's created it. So we used to say that if you wanted to knock something down, you either needed to build it yourself or you needed to ask the person, you know, can I knock your building down? And if the person said no, then you need to go make your own building to knock down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm also thinking about the take-apart center that we often talk with people about, creating some kind of place in the environment where you're deconstructing things like, I'm thinking of a hairdryer or a blender or...
Oh, yeah, we had a sewing machine the kids got to take apart.
To take apart. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff is not only to see how things work, but then also to get in there and see the moving parts can be pretty engaging.
And this is, I mean, if you need another buzzword to attach to this, this is so much STEM going on.
Oh, totally.
It's learning, I mean, just the physicality of the world, but also the
how things
are composed, how they're put together, and how they function when you're fiddling around that way. And in Australia, we visited one program that had a great tool area, and it was just a separate small shed-sized building on their playground, but the walls opened up, so you get a nice breeze through.
Like a Lamborghini.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And whatever car that is, I don't know.
And so,
like, I know what I'm talking about.
Those wings would go up and provide more shade around it, and so it was just a nice area. But what they had for hammering is bottle tops, the metal glass bottle tops, beer bottle tops, for you to hammer nails through. So you take the... We'll demonstrate later.
Like a cap?
Yeah,
the bottle cap.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The glass. You threw me with the glass.
The glass.
So they used bottle caps.
Yes. And then hammered through those.
Got it.
And
that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and because it's really easy to pierce them with the nail, and then they're hammering something to whatever they're hammering. So that was kind of neat. And you know, people freak out about the tools. They're dangerous.
You know why? No, I'll tell you why. Yes, there are. That's exactly why. That's exactly why. Back in the day when we used to do the summer sessions at my house, and we would have the teachers leave with make and takes, and we would have them make stuff, we spent more time teaching them how to use a drill and how to use a screwdriver. And that right there was worth the price of admission for some of them. So I'm just...
Yeah, we did a handful of make and take gigs where we loaded up a trailer with power tools and went out and did gigs. And I had people tell... I mean, again, early learning, so mostly women come into the trainings. And I had people telling me my father or husband would never let me touch a tool.
Exactly, yeah.
And I'm like, you're a grown-ass woman. You want to touch a tool, touch a tool. But, I mean, that experience, it's very empowering for adults who've never done it. But if they can, if you haven't and you can make yourself comfortable, it's a great thing to do with kids, because the pounding a golf tee into a hunk of styrofoam with a plastic hammer is a thing. I mean, there's an experience there, but it's not as, again, visceral as pounding a nail into a hunk of
wood,
because it takes some effort.
It takes patience. It takes trust.
And you sense you've accomplished something when you get it done. The same with sawing through even something as small as a 1x2 with a real handsaw.
That's dimensions of a piece of wood.
Yes. If you're 4 or 5 years old, that's gonna take a little bit of energy. You're gonna build up a sweat that way. And when that board finally the piece you're cutting off falls to the ground, you feel like you've actually accomplished something. And it's different than, again, cutting the styrofoam. So
kids know what's real.
Yeah, and they don't want to hurt themselves. Grandbaby's got a tool set. She probably, how many toolboxes do you have now, Rowan?
Two
toolboxes. She grew out. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
She grew out of her first toolbox very quickly. But you know, she's got a hand drill. You know, just the little thing and make holes and a couple saws and utility knives and all that kind of stuff. And the way you get comfortable with that kind of stuff is to use that kind of stuff.
So memory just popped in my head. Uh-huh. I was thinking, like, what is my first earliest tool memory? I know Mary at Mary's Nursery School, she had a tool set, and so we were banging on stuff. But at my home, my parents used to squish aluminum cans with a sledgehammer. And I remember standing in the garage holding it like straight up and down and just smashing that can.
Going Gallagher on that thing?
Not up and but straight down like mm-hmm. Thor's
like
hammer,
a masher.
Like,
yeah.
Totally like a masher. And I mean, I can't tell you of any emotion I remember having, but I mean, I was probably 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you learn to watch your toes because somebody's letting you use a tool.
Yeah, well, the mashers are great. The first ones we made, we've got them in our web shop now because our buddy Kristen up in Minnesota wanted some made for her playground, and we took these big hunks of log and put a big wooden dowel in it, and they're great for smashing stuff. Mm-hmm. And I mean, my favorite mashing story is we had Hershey the Chocolate Lab up in the Canada with us at forest visiting a forest school and the Tiernanog Forest School. Love you guys. The kids were smashing groundfall apples in this vat, and Hershey the Chocolate Lab was gobbling them up. And then we...
interesting 2 weeks afterwards.
It was close to, the rest of our road trip up through British Columbia, Nova Scotia, out to Prince Edward Island was hoping we had a hotel room close to the exit to... Because the dog would be standing there with her legs crossed, just waiting to get out. And
one night, I just left a note for Jeff. If we're not in the room, we're sleeping in the truck because I'm tired of...
Going back and forth.
Yes, exactly.
So I guess the exploratory play you don't want is eating groundfall apples.
Whether you're a dog or a human.
Yeah, whether dog or a human. And so this is such great, but such simple. I mean, again, it's all...
It's seeing the value in things that our grown-up eyes might often just poo-poo. No pun intended with the dog.
Anything else we want to throw in on this one?
No, I think I've kind of... pulled this apart, so to speak.
Before we wrap up, go through that definition one more time.
Exploratory play. Play to access, in order to access factual information consisting of manipulative behaviors such as handling, throwing, banging, or mouthing objects. Engaging with an object or area and either by manipulation or movement, assessing its properties, possibilities, and content such as stacking bricks.
So
can this thing do?
And how does this exist in the world? It's really figuring out.
And what can I do with it?
Yeah, it's really figuring out the world. We got to remember that one of the primary drives of young children is to figure out how the world works, how they fit in it, and how to survive and thrive in that world. That's more than one thing. I just said one thing, but that's actually 3 things.
3 things.
And this process, this type of play is a great tool for evolutionary tool for doing those things. Let's wrap it up. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Back soon with another episode. Come hang out with us at the Talking Play events we got going on in Indianapolis and Portland and
Madison,
Wisconsin. It'll be fun. Check it out at playvolutionhq.com events if you want to learn more. Bye-bye.
Adios.
See you later.
's been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.
Hey, we need your support to keep the podcasts flowing. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/support to learn how. One of the big things you can do is shop Amazon with the link we provide. You buy your cat food, you buy your kids' books, you buy whatever it is you buy on Amazon, you pay the regular price. We get a small percentage of it. Everybody wins. A lot of people are doing it. It really supports the shows, and we really appreciate it. Give it a try. Thanks.